This is Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Somich on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hey, it is Ready, Set, Bet here on a Saturday. Matt Brown and Mike Somich with you for the next 3 hours as we talk all things U.S. Open. We got the NBA Finals, the Stanley Cup Finals. We're going to talk Major League Baseball all day long. Mike, you're even going to talk some horses. Can we get them to run fast? Can we cash some tickets today? Rocking and rolling on Saturday.
Yeah, let's hope so. Let's hope we can get some fast horses out there. And we've got fast starts over at the U.S. Open as well. We're seeing the course be a little bit more gettable, got some rain into it. I thought you made a great point on Wednesday. The rain really helping players hold the fairways more than it is the greens, but that gives them a better opportunity to then go pin seeking out there. We'll see if some guys can go low here before this course hardens up.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'm going to need some help. We're going to need some love, but we'll talk a ton about that as we get going. Real quickly, we do have a first pitch coming in just a couple of minutes. So if you wanted to get down, we want to let you know that the Marlins and the Nationals are going in about 4 minutes here. And this is Cade Gibson for the Marlins, Trevor Williams for the Nationals. Marlins are plus 108 dogs on the road, minus 131. Home favorites are the Nationals, a flat nine, a little bit shaded towards the over here in this one. Mike, I looked, I spent about 30 seconds at it, and I moved on with this game.
I tried to find a bet here, but you got a bullpen game coming from the Marlins, who don't exactly have a great bullpen, don't love the starter for the Nationals. I attempted to play the over, but then I remembered it's the Marlins offense. So there's just a lot of differing ways that this one could go. If I was going to bet anything, it would probably be a Nationals team total over, but I don't have enough conviction to put it in the account.
Yeah, it's kind of the same with me, right? It's just we're not forcing bets just for the sake of forcing bets. And that just would have been a forced bet for me. And so I looked at it, I gave it some consideration, I will say, and then I moved on. That's kind of what we do sometimes with these, just like I did here with this one. Our other game that's coming to you here in the next 10 minutes, which is the Reds and the Tigers. This is Brady Singer for the Reds, Jack Flaherty for the Tigers. Reds are big plus 153 dogs there. And so with the Tigers at minus 188, Mike, we've talked about this a ton. Flat eight, by the way, is your total here in this one. You know, we've talked about this a ton where I love to play the Tigers as either small favorites or small dogs. Getting up into that big favorite territory, even against Brady Singer, is just not something I'm incredibly comfortable with. That being said, I think it is worth noting that Jack Flaherty, a guy that obviously we have a pretty decent sample size of, been pitching in the majors since 2017, is having a pretty good year this year. I mean, we are looking at a guy that historically, if you look at his expecteds and where he's supposed to be, has been in the like low to mid fours. And Mike, you know, this year, 341 surface stat with a 337 backing it up on the XFIP, a 321 Sierra, and a 371 XERA. So Flaherty has at least figured something out so far in a small sample size, only 13 starts for him, but he is much better this year than he has been over the course of his career.
Yeah, clear advantage here on the mound for the Tigers in this spot. But you mentioned it, the 180 price is what really got me. I was hoping I could lay a half run first five with this Tigers team, catch plus money that way. But when you're a minus 180 favorite, you're looking at laying minus 130, minus 135 if you're laying that half run in the first five. And I just don't want to go that high of a price with the Tigers offense, even against Singer. I don't fully trust here. We've talked about this Tigers team, great team to play at a short plus money price when you're getting the right pitchers on the mound. But as a big favorite, it's really hard for me to pull the trigger. And the Reds offense isn't bad, Matt. This is a game where you could see the Reds offense get to Flaherty as well. So because of the setup here, just another one where I'm not looking to get involved early.
We have been doing live programming from up in Omaha for the last few days, including, of course, Follow the Money that just preceded us here on the network. We're going to head back out there to Rocco's real quick, Mike, as they're going to update the board here for the Jell-O Shot Challenge. So as they get going, are these the updated numbers? Or these are the updated numbers. Okay, so here we are. If you're watching with us over on YouTube TV, our very own VSiN Watch app, well, you can see for yourself. If you're over on the radio, you can see. Bringing up the rear, UCLA has only purchased 484 Jell-O shots over at Rocco's. What are you guys doing? I understand you live at the beach. You'd rather be sunning. You'd rather be doing whatever. But I mean, come on, guys. Let's go. Let's get something purchased there. Oregon State, not too far ahead of them at 532. We have 863 for Louisville, 881 for Arizona. Now we're getting into the four figures here where we have 1,928 for Coastal Carolina, 1,930 for Arkansas. If you've been doing the math in your head, yes, we are down to just two teams. And 31-25 for Murray State, and LSU leading the way with 5,083 Jell-O shots purchased so far up at Rocco's over there. $5 each. And Mike, this was no surprise. LSU, you probably the minus, like, at least a lead early on, as long as they were still in the tournament, right? I mean, like, now this could change if they get, if it's a 2 and Q for them. But yeah, early on, LSU was like minus 20,000 to lead this, like, in the first few days.
Yeah, LSU is always, I think they'll win even if they're 2 and out, Matt. That is how much LSU love you get down there. And if you planned on being there for the week, why not just stay down there and drink your pain away if the LSU Tigers do go out early? I got to say, what's going on in Arizona? Isn't Arizona supposed to be an awesome party school? And they're sitting down there like fifth, sixth on the board. Come on, Arizona. Pick it up. 881 is not great. You should be way further ahead of Louisville. And the fact you're over 1,000 behind Coastal Carolina and Arkansas, I'm disappointed in Arizona, Matt.
Yeah. Shout out to Isaiah Von Vrinkel for the live shot there coming to us from Omaha. Colby Marcio going to join us here in a few minutes. We'll get his props for the day over Major League Baseball. Quentin Mills is going to join us to talk some college baseball. We'll have Aaron Halterman joining us to talk all things sports and maybe even a horse or two. Maybe we'll get a fast running horse from Aaron Halterman as well. And then Michael Fiddle going to join us later on in hour number three to talk the NBA. And Mike, you know, we look at what went on in the NBA last night. A very improbable cover. If you had that, you should feel lucky. If you had the Thunder side, you probably should feel like you got a bad beat last night. If you had the Pacers, OKC, Mike, shoots 17% from three and finds a way to win and cover in this game. SGA goes for 35. He was 10 of 10 from the free throw line. Jalen Williams chips in 27. Chet goes 14 points, 15 boards for this Thunder team. And I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment, Mike, but it feels like this series now is OKC's, because Indiana, it feels like them letting that one slip away is going to end up costing them a championship. They're going to look back on this. If you see SGA holding that trophy over his head and you're a Pacers fan, you're going to remember this game.
Yeah, this was a bad beat for the Pacers, not only for the bettors, but for the Indiana Pacers. If you wanted to win this series, this was a game it felt like you kind of had to have, and not because you needed to be up 3-1, but because you can't really let Oklahoma City steal a game when they have 3 3-pointers in the entire game. And the third one that they hit came with 3 minutes left from Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and that was the start of this little mini Shai run where he goes on a 7-2 run by himself, ends up scoring the majority of the late points for Oklahoma City. Most of those coming from the free throw line. The officiating, a big story in this. Scott Foster gets involved again in the storyline. A lot of questionable calls. I thought it was kind of questionable on both sides. I didn't think it was overly drastic to one side.
I'm glad you just pointed
that out.
Again,
another situation where we're talking about officiating.
I'm glad you said that, just because, like, there were things. I don't think anything was, like, incredibly egregious, and certainly I don't think it was biased one way or the other. So, yes, are we always going to nitpick officiating, especially when all eyes are on one singular game? You know, yes, of course we are, but I didn't think it was really shaded one way or the other. And the calls were kind of borderline anyway. I don't think anyone, you know, everyone likes to scream someone got robbed, or I don't think anyone got robbed.
No, I don't think the Pacers lost this game because of the officiating. Yeah. I just think the officiating was funky. Like, both ways, again, I thought there was some odd no calls and calls both sides. You know, they never call traveling in the NBA, but Shai had one of the more egregious travelings I've ever seen coming down the stretch there that obviously did not get called after a push-off. So it was just a very odd game. But you go back and like we said, you look at this, and if you're a Pacers fan, if you're a Pacers player, you're really hurting this morning, because it really should have been 3-1 with the way this game played out, with the way that Oklahoma City played. And I watched this OKC team, and if it's not Shai, who is it, Matt? Like, you watch this offense toward the end of the game. I don't want Jalen Williams to have the basketball. I don't want Chet Holmgren to have the basketball. Caruso would probably be the guy I'd want second taking the shot, which is crazy to say for a team with this level of depth, but it feels like the moment might be too big for a couple of their guys.
Sitting at 2-2, the Thunder have now moved to minus 450 in the series. Pacers are at plus 350. Next game will be Monday. They're 9.5-point favorites currently at home are the Thunder. 223.5 is the total. If you think the Pacers went outright, plus 330 there on the money line. Mike, you know, again, I would just play them 330 in this game as opposed to 350 on the series if I honestly liked the Pacers, because if they lose this game, it's over. So just take the 330 for the singular game, you know, as opposed to 350 for the series.
It's going to be difficult for them to win game six and game seven, especially game seven in Oklahoma City, where you're not going to see the role players be able to contribute as highly. Total's interesting in this one to me. We've seen this total get bet down from the jump. We were at 228 and a half game one, 227 and a half game two. Saw that go down in game three and game four as well. But still, three of the four games have gone to the under here, outside of kind of miraculous over in game two, really. 222 and a half, with the way these two teams are playing defense and the fact that you're starting to see both of these teams tighten up on the offensive end, and we're now in a huge game five, kind of like the under 222 and a half here, Matt.
We'll be talking a lot of U.S. Open today, but we will not be talking a lot about Bryson DeChambeau, Ludwig Åberg, Patrick Cantlay, Wyndham Clark, Tommy Fleetwood, Joaquin Niemann, Sepp Straka, Justin Thomas, Shane Lowry, Justin Rose, all of whom missed the cut out there at Oakmont. I'll have thoughts here on this tournament and how they have this set up. From a golf purist standpoint, Mike, I'm sure there are people who are going to sit there and they're going to stand for, you know, how the USGA set this up and how difficult it is and all that. From a golf betting standpoint, three players under par, two at even par after two rounds, which means 151 players were over par after two rounds. I don't know. I'm not loving it. And again, I will talk a ton about that over the course of the show. Colby Marcio, though, coming up next, we're going to get his Major League Baseball props.
Welcome back to Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Somich on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Ready, Set, Bet here on VSiN, Matt Brown and Mike Somich. Made an observation during the break, Mike. I look behind me. Got the U.S. Open going on. We got some baseball just started. We got some things going on. Like, okay, all right, there might be some people down in the book. I look down there, and who do I see? I see the Meatball Brothers down there. Those of you listeners that are loyal and were listening to me and Mike during football season know we had the Meatball Brothers on a couple different times throughout the course of our show in the fall, because they made the run and they made the ultimate run, Mike, all the way to the very end of Circus Survivor. And they are a lively group. They're wearing their Meatball Brothers shirts down there and everything. So good on them, obviously, signing up for this year.
I'm still disappointed. I've never had the meatballs. I don't have a shirt, Matt. I'm 0 for 2 in the Meatball Brothers memorabilia world here. So I will hopefully they drop a shirt off by the studio so I can finally get one. I want to try the meatballs as well. I love meatballs. Why is there more marketing here?
I got me a shirt. I got me a Meatball Brothers shirt.
I know you did.
I know.
I know. That's why I'm upset about this.
I'm curious. I might actually, on a break, go out there, pop down. Wondering if they go the 10 entry route this year, or if they go do they go like the 60 entries, right? Are they all getting 10? You know, so it's, you know, curious as to what their strategy will be this year with all of that. But let's switch over to the Major League Baseball prop market here as Colby Marcio joins us here on a Saturday at Colby M. Betts over on the Twitter machine. Of course, you can find him at Betting News as well. Colby, we're talking before we come on. One, you needed to know who the Meatball Brothers were, so there's our explanation. And two, you said, you know what? I found some stuff that we can talk about. Don't love today.
Yeah, today stinks. But before, I have to say something about the Meatball Brothers. As a guy that made meatballs on Thursday for Dave Ross to talk about Antonio Sanzantella, I need to shake their hand. If anything, I just want to shake their hand, because that is just the best nickname ever. I hope to God they're Italian, and I hope to God those meatballs are fantastic. But yes, the slate stinks. I managed to find enough place to feel happy about getting through the day with a couple things to sweat out, but really, it's a Saturday. Saturday slate's supposed to be awesome. It's not the greatest.
Yeah, we don't have the major pitching matchups. We don't have the weather is an issue in a couple different stadiums as well, which makes it a little more difficult. We've got the wind blowing in at Wrigley. We don't have a game in Sacramento or in Colorado. All of these different reasons why the things that we usually look to attack with player props all are taken away from us. But with that being said, we are still going after the Rockies, and you and I are on the same side of this one. Look, I'm not sure what to expect from Strider, but I do think the Braves bats get going again today.
Yeah, I hate, this is one of the bets I hate. And the reason why I hate it is because I hate the Braves. They're just not good. However, the matchup is too good to pass on. Yesterday, I passed on it, and I kind of regret it. Is this me chasing yesterday's miss? Maybe. But this is the highest-rated team on batters-box. I'm taking the first five-team total over 2.5, minus 145. I'm paying the juice. If you don't want to pay the juice, just take some of the other guys I'm going to rattle off to get a hit and pair it with it. You'll probably get plus money. But they have 9 elite-rated hitters today, 4 above the league K rate, 4 above the league ground ball rate. They average 2.44 runs in the first five innings. The Rockies are dead last, allowing 4 runs in the first five. On the road, they're a little better, averaging around 3.14, excuse me. Chase Dahlander, the worst rated pitcher on the day, has a poor average hitter matchup, ISO, hard contact percentage, and K percentage. He's allowing 43% hard contact, allowing 4.7 hits per start, 1.7 extra base hits, allowing 3.7 runs per start. He's 55% fastballs. All of the Braves hitters can destroy fastballs, and I'm really going to lean into that and expect him to make a couple mistakes here and there in the first five. But I think it's well worth paying the price. Nothing else really grabbed me for the Braves. I don't want to take a chance on a player prop because that whole lineup is too inconsistent for me. I did like Matt Olson, but yesterday he went off, and I don't really want to go back to him, especially when, like I said, they're extremely inconsistent. So hopefully the first five team total comes through for us.
I'm sitting here watching one of your plays at the plate right now. Oh, no, he fouled out. Okay, but that's okay. Kerry Carpenter. Oh. Yeah, Kerry Carpenter. There's plenty of at-bats to come. You'd like his matchup today and perhaps maybe being able to take one out of the yard.
Yeah, if you guys want to take his prop live right now for his bases or his home run, I think it's a great, you're probably getting a way better price than me. I got plus 105. He's killing it at home. 287 average, 842 OPS, has an elite rating today. 72% of the time records a hit, 31% of the time two hits, 45% of the time over his bases, but that's not the greatest. But he's going up against Brady Singer, who's a 5.4 ERA on the road and a 313 opponent batting average on the road. Poor average hitter matchup, ISO and hard contact, allowing almost 40% hard contact. 79% of his pitches are sinker and slider, and they're both sub-average pitches, and Carey destroys both of those. So you're going to get a lot better number right now if you take it live. So I highly suggest it. I think Carey does have a good day today.
We got Clayton Kershaw on the mound for the Los Angeles Dodgers. That usually means that you're looking for a player prop against him. I've noticed that trend a couple times that you've been on the show. So we've got the Giants taking on Clayton Kershaw. Who are we going to say takes Kershaw out of the yard?
I think Helio Ramos has a great day. I took his bases over at plus 105 and his home run at 4-1. This isn't your father's Clayton Kershaw. Maybe that's too old. Maybe this isn't your older brother's Clayton Kershaw. He's old. Just remember that. He's old. He has a home ERA of 831, a 306 opponent batting average. Righties are hitting almost 300, 473 slugging percentage, 857 OPS. He has no pitch above league average. Ramos destroys every single one of those pitches. Ramos on the road, sub 300 average, 912 OPS. Against lefties since 2024, 337 batting average, 651 slugging percentage, and a 1062 OPS. 27 elite ratings, 85% of the time records a hit, 44% of the time records two hits, 33% of the time records a double, 25% of the time home run, 59% bases over this prop that we're on. And if you want to take the HRR, he goes over it 70% of the time. So a lot of great trends and a lot of great numbers for Ramos today. And it's really hard for me to pass up on, especially when he's going up against that dinosaur, who I think is one of the best lefties of all time. Nothing but respect for Kershaw, but you're old. You're really old, and I got to fade you.
Yeah, I mean, we are looking at an average fastball now at 89.2 miles an hour for Clayton Kershaw. I understand he's left-handed. You get away with a little less velo left-handed. But, yeah, sub-90 on that fastball now for Clayton Kershaw here on the 2025 season. Talking to Colby Marcio. Colby, you talk about Clayton Kershaw. Is there any other, since we only talk to you once a week, are there any other pitchers throughout the course of the week that you are looking to pick on? Are there pitchers when you see them in the rotation for the day, you go, okay, I need to see if there's any hitters that I want to play against this guy?
We already mentioned him. Number one, and I think I'm going to end up turning this into a system play. and that's Antonio Sanzatella. If they're going to continually put him out there and leave him out there to give up 9 hits and 4 runs a game, I need to be on the opposing team's run line or team total, whatever is the better number and bang for my buck. He's horrible. And I think that's putting it lightly, because he is the worst pitcher I've seen in the last couple seasons. And I'm just baffled how long they leave him out there. Giving up 9 hits the other day is just egregious. Like, we know you're a bad team, Rockies. Mm-hmm. We know you're a bad team. But come on. Like, have some respect for yourself. I'm hoping he gets some couple good starts here and there in the near future. He had a good start against the Mets in his, not the start before, the one before that. And it keeps him out there. He doesn't get DFA'd. If he has a couple sprinkled in, peppered in good starts here and there, we're going to be happy with that, because then we could just continue him with the other starts here and there. But he is somebody, if you're not looking at, you need to be looking at. He looks like he's throwing batting practice out there. His delivery is lame. He's not throwing that hard. He threw 92 a couple of weeks ago, and my jaw about fell off because I thought he threw 42 miles an hour. He's not good. He's not good. I can't emphasize it enough. You should be blindly fading him, because there's no good stat backing anything that he does.
Now, we got Spencer Strider on the hill today for Atlanta. Another pitcher that, what do you make of him? I mean, he had a 4.8 K to walk ratio before the injury. He's 2.2 now. He clearly doesn't have the same velo. What do you make of Strider? Are you looking to fade him? Or are you going to kind of wait this out and see what version of him we get?
The Rockies do have a good matchup today in the current season ratings on batters-box, but you go back 3 years, he's still got good stats, so I don't want to look at it. I don't want to touch it, because is he due for a good start here and there? Yeah, the Rockies haven't been terrible the last 7 days, last 14, but it's still the Rockies. They have no identity. Today, I would not take anything Strider, because I don't know what to expect. That whole team is a big question mark to me, and then you're going up against a bad team, so I wouldn't know where to go. But he is someone you should keep an eye out for, because, like you said, he hasn't been good. Is he due for a good start? I mean, I think everybody's potentially due for a good start, especially someone like Antonio Sanzatella. Sorry, I had to go back to him. Had to throw him under the bus. But yeah, it's really weird seeing these guys who we've seen dominate just fall off a cliff.
He's Colby Marcio at Colby M. Betts at Betting News as well. Thanks for the time, buddy.
Of course. Thank you, guys. See you next week.
If you are not yet a VSiN Pro subscriber, we've been talking about this all week as well. You can go in for $199. You'll get an entire year and also a free copy of Josh Applebaum's new book, NFL Sharp Betting Playbook. You can sign up for that over at VSiN.com/subscribe. Again, use the promo code BOOK, $199 for a whole year, and NFL Sharp Betting Playbook.
Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Somich on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Ready, Set, Bet here on VSiN. Matt Brown and Mike Somich rolling along on a Saturday. Do want to let you know Colby also on some Vlad Jr. today for the Blue Jays. So over a base and a half, and then he's going to take a shot on a home run as well, plus 650. So some Vlad Jr. in the account as well there, Mike.
Yeah, looking for the Blue Jays to keep it going here. They've been playing good baseball the last couple of weeks, Matt. Let's see if Vlad can stay hot.
They really have. Too little, too late. I don't know. I guess we can see. I gave you a little bit of my thoughts here from the U.S. Open at the top of the show. We'll get into it a little bit further now, as three guys will tee it up at under par. Sam Burns, J.J. Spahn, and Victor Hovland. Two guys in Ben Griffin and Adam Scott at even par, and then everybody else started the day at over par. Mike, yesterday, the course playing extremely difficult. 55 of the 156 golfers played it at least six over, I should say, on the round yesterday. And I don't want to sound like old man screaming at clouds or anything. And I understand that we want to see these guys tested, but you know, from a betting standpoint, Mike, if the course is unhandicappable, then I don't know what we can do. You know, I mean, like this. It's no type of player is playing better than another, no skill set, no anything. You know, you emphasized, we talked about this on Wednesday, you emphasized driving distance. Obviously, I mean, DeChambeau, Rory, Oberg, they all terrible in this. Sam Burns has sprayed the ball historically off the tee. He's much, much better in this tournament than before, but now you see JJ Spawn up there. Victor Hovland's been playing like absolute garbage, but he is up here now. And then you just got like everyone kind of in between, you know, Victor Perez. Siwoo Kim is one of the shortest guys on tour that there is at T8. So I don't know. It's to me, they've set the course up to where from a betting standpoint, it was kind of a crapshoot.
I would agree with you. I think from a betting point, it is kind of a crapshoot. I think that's why if you're going to bet it this weekend, look for some prices. Like, this is the mental grind yesterday was what I thought was one of the most interesting storylines and parts of this tournament. You had players out there for 6+ hour rounds at a major championship. That is wild. And because of how high the rough was, it took a while for some of these players to decide how they were going to hit specific shots. You have these drivable par fours, these long, long par threes, these holes that just create a lot of time on the course. And you saw the mental wear and tear on these players yesterday. We'll see now with twosomes instead of threesomes if we can play a little bit faster. But like you look at DeChambeau, for instance, who I had high in my model because he bombs the ball. He's hitting 4-iron when he needs to par a hole to try and make the cut because he's so mentally worn down. You got guys like Spawn who at the end of this round just kind of melt down a little bit. He had 3 bogeys in the last 4 holes and he birdied the 17th, the only hole on the course playing under par. But he was in the rough off the tee and got up and down to be able to do so. So I thought the mental grind of yesterday was one of the bigger storylines. Just hard to stay focused for that long with that long in between shots. We saw a player play 3 holes in over an hour at one point. Just really, really tough conditions outside of just the course, just with the time that you were spending out there and having to think about all of this.
Yeah, I mean, look, if I was coming in with absolutely nothing in pocket, like you said, I'd look maybe a little bit down the board. The thing is unlike most players, you look at Sam Burns and he played very, very well because he's been putting the lights out through the 2 rounds. I mean, Mike, he's the best putter on tour, right? So there's like, while there are a handful of guys you can take putting stats and carry over, and there's a handful of guys you can take putting stats because they're so bad that you can carry over, and then everyone usually just kind of falls somewhere in between, right? Like you have a hot week putting, you have a bad week putting, depends on what type of green you're on, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Burns is the best putter on tour, so him continuing to putt for 2 rounds very well is actually likely. So it doesn't surprise me that Data Golf has him at 27% to win this tournament. But yeah, I mean, if I was coming in blind, I'd be looking a little further down the board. I added Thomas Dietrich before yesterday's round, so I've got him live. I had Henley before the tournament started. I added Bob McIntyre yesterday before the round started. So I've got those guys are at least somewhere, you know, in this. I think Siwoo, Brooks Koepka, you know, I mean, Keegan, even if he had put 2 rounds together. I mean, I think these are dudes that maybe you could look at. But yeah, it is. I've not handicapped this tournament very well so far. So take all of that with a grain of salt.
Yeah, I bet some Robert McIntyre this morning. I'm glad to hear that you got on board. He's 1 under. I wanted some of these early guys because I do think this course also gets harder as the day goes on. I think it's going to be tougher for the leaders to go low than it is some of these guys early. I like the fact that McIntyre started on the front 9, which is by far the more difficult 9. That stretch from 10 to 14 are all gettable. 17, as I mentioned, the lowest scoring hole in the course. So I took a little bit of Robert McIntyre. You can still get him at 50-1. Last I saw, it looks like 55-1 right now via DraftKings. So he's someone who's tied for 13th, 6 back. I don't hate taking a shot there. My week is going to be decided by Ben Griffin. I got him top debutant. We talked about this on Wednesday at plus 360. I have him top 20 and top 10 at some pretty good numbers. So hopefully Ben Griffin can just stick around for the weekend here, Matt.
We got at least one more weekend of this. Let's head over to the ice.
Technical regulations, size of what? It's time to ask Mike Somich, what the
f***? Don't you ever touch my puck?
Might be retiring this segment, but we got at least one more weekend out of it, Mike. What are we looking at?
Yeah, we do. We might have to find just international hockey or something, Matt, to keep this puppy going. let's go over 6.5 in game 5. You know why, Matt? The over's 4-0, and it's still not really being adjusted. It was 6 in game 1, 6 in game 2, 6.5 in game 3, but you got plus money for the over. Game 4 opens 6.5, gets bet down. Guess what? We went right back over. You can get 6.5 plus 100 right now out there. This is an over series. These two teams are playing up and down the ice. You're seeing quality scoring chances on both sides. I wouldn't be shocked if you actually get a better number if you wait until puck drop, because the fact that we've got Calvin Picard who's going to be in the net for the Oilers now may bring this down a little bit with how well that he played in the third period. But yeah, give me the over 6.5 again, game five. I think it goes 5-0 in this series. It's just a dead over series, Matt.
I'll tell you this, and you know, everybody knows, everyone's been with us since the beginning, Mike, I'm not hockey guy. Yes, one blowout, but outside of that, it's been riveting. It really has.
How could you not be enjoying the Stanley Cup Finals? Yeah. Three games that have gone to overtime. You've got stars on both sides. If you watch 5 minutes of this, of any of the hockey games, you could tell these teams hate each other. Like, there is a grudge match happening on the ice. They went 7 last year. We're tied at 2 heading back to Edmonton this year. I don't know how you don't watch this theater. Even if you don't like hockey, if you're not betting on it, you need to be watching this just because it is so enjoyable to see this level of high play, because both these teams, very talented, very skilled, and also that level of hatred and physicality, and with everything on the line now in a best of three series. It's much watched TV, Matt.
Let's head to the track. Or not.
Saddle up, partner. Want to bet the horses with Mike Somich?
When I bet on horses, I never lose. Why? I bet on all the horses.
It's time to pony up.
Giddy up.
Okay, we don't do this often. We're heading to two different tracks today. I mean, Mike is usually kind of honed in on one. We're going to start here at Santa Anita. We're also going to Delaware, though.
Yeah, we're going coast to coast, baby. Mm-hmm. We got races all over the country today. Four separate grade three stakes. If you want to find out more about them, check out VSiN at the track. A lot of the picks for these stakes still available over there on at VSiN Live on YouTube or on the Best Bets feed in the VSiN podcast app as well. So make sure you check those out if you want more bets for today. Let's start out with race number 4 from Santa Anita. And Matt, we're going to do something I've never done on this segment. We're going to play a pick 3. So what is a pick 3? A pick 3 is picking 3 straight winners. Think of it as a 3-leg parlay where you have to pick the winner of the 4th race, the winner of the 5th race, and the winner of the 6th race. I'm going to try and do that here with 3 horses that I like quite a bit today in smaller fields. We'll start out with race number 4. The number 2 horse, Thought Process, should win easily. This is a horse that should go gate to wire on the turf. It's been in graded stakes company, now dropping down to allowance for a debut. The price is going to be very short on this horse. Don't want to bet it to win, but do want to get it in the pick 3. In the 5th race, I don't like the favorite, the number 2 horse, the GM. So let's go to the number 6 horse, Mining District, here to create a little bit of value. And then in the 6th race, we'll close it out with one of my favorite horses in training, the number 2, Mrs. Astor, who just towers over this field, will be a short price. But by injecting that 6 in the middle, I'm hoping we can get somewhere around 12-1 for this pick 3. So 2 with 6 with 2. Pick 3 in the 4th race. So we need to win the 4th race with the 2, the 5th race with the 6, and the 6th race with the 2. And then let's head over to Delaware Park, one of their feature races of the year, the Delaware Oaks today, a grade 3 race going 1/16 on the dirt for 3-year-old fillies. And we didn't get the top tier fillies in this year's 3-year-old class, but it makes it a very good betting race. I'm going to go with the number 6, Kassar, here. This is a horse that debuted and was very good, and then went into the Gulfstream Park Oaks, a grade 2 second start, first time trying 2 turns, first time against winners, a lot up against her. She ran okay, but she wasn't able to win that day. Drops back to a $100,000 N1X allowance and looked awesome. Now she's jumping back into stakes company, and the price is right here at 6-1. I want to be against the number 4, Margie's Intention, who won the Black Eyed Susan last time out. That was a very bad version of that race. Because she takes money, I'll go elsewhere. So give me the 6, Kassar, 6-1 there, and Delaware's 9th race as well, Matt.
Interesting. Okay. All right. What in the literal, though, is going to have to get some action for me? If you want to bet this along with Mike, First Bet obviously is the place to do it. FirstBet.com, 1STBET.com. VSiN 200 is your promo code. Get up to a $200 sign up bonus when you do that. FirstBet.com.
Set Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Somich on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Ready, Set, Bet here on VSiN. We were talking about a couple of different ads we had made. You added Bob McIntyre out there. Bob McIntyre, 2 under. So, again, not still 5 strokes off the lead, but, you know, maybe Sam Burns comes back down to earth. Maybe JJ Spawn comes back down to earth. but he is sitting 2 over right now, so 5 strokes off the lead. Trevor Cohn, also 2 under.
Who?
Yeah. Trevor Cohn, if anyone was wondering. Yeah. I'm going to go out on a limb and say Trevor Cohn. I want to say clone, but it's Cohn. Some sort of qualifier or some sort of something like that, because he is 32 years old. He has 0 career wins, 0 top 10s. Okay. So he's only played 43 events in 10 years. So
yeah.
Yeah.
His previous high finish this year on the PGA Tour was a tied for 52nd, and he's done it twice. He's missed the cut in, let's see here, 9 of the 12 events
he's picking a good time to play his best golf of his life.
Well, the course really suited him, Matt.
Yeah.
I think if you looked in your models, you would have seen Trevor Cohn really
just
pop.
Blew right up. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. But we'll continue to monitor US Open. We'll let you know once the leaders get going here in a little while as well. But now joining us, Quentin Mills. He is co-founder of College Baseball Insiders, VSiN College Baseball contributor as well at QMillie over on the Twitter machine. Quentin, how you doing, buddy? Appreciate the time.
Always a pleasure to be with you guys.
So we see what we saw yesterday. We get some 2 pretty good games to start off the College World Series. Heading into this thing, let's just pretend that you didn't get to see what you saw yesterday. Heading into the College World Series, what teams did you like?
Well, on the left side of the bracket, I thought it's, you know, there's 3 teams that could take it: Arizona, Oregon State, and Coastal. But I liked Coastal's pitching depth. I liked their experience probably the best, and they're just kind of knack for winning and the way they find hits in key moments. So on the left side, I'd probably lean towards the Shants there. And then on the right side, I got to give my Woo Pig co-host a shout out here. I think I'm jumping on the Arkansas bandwagon with them. You know, I look at them again, I'll go back to how I spoke about Coastal. They, this year, Dave Van Horn has found an offense that Arkansas hasn't had in several years. And then same thing with pitching. They have so much depth. You know, Arkansas is kind of pitching university there. And when you look at this, I look at LSU on that side of the bracket as their only contender. They have 2 guys that they really trust in Anthony Ianson and Cade Anderson. But outside of that, there's no Game 3 starter. And then their bullpen just to me isn't as deep as what Arkansas can bring to the table. I think if Arkansas was to lose, they still have a shot to come through the loser's bracket. When I look at LSU, I don't feel the same about that. So that was kind of the conclusive evidence to me on the pick the Hogs there on the right side.
Yeah, we got the 2 teams playing tonight. So it sounds like I want LSU to win so I can get Arkansas once they lose that game to win the tournament. Because I do think the best way to bet either of those teams to win the tournament is if they go to the loser's bracket, because your price is going to become exponentially higher. You have a fairly easy round 2 game in the loser's bracket as well as the round 3 game. And then you got to beat the big dog twice there. I like that you mentioned the top side. I talked about if you're going to bet someone to win, take one of those teams on the top side, Coastal, Arizona, or Oregon State, simply because you're likely, if you can get the team to the final, you're going to be able to hedge out of it if you're not happy with what you're left with there. And with Coastal and Oregon State winning, those 2 teams now your favorites to be able to get through that top side of the bracket. What do you make in this second game of the World Series for those 2 teams? Do you like Coastal? Do you like Oregon State? Would you be interested in betting either to win the championship now that we know they're on the winner's bracket side?
You know, I got to give it to Coastal. I just, you know, sometimes you just kind of feel like that gut feeling, like this is the it year for that team. And when you look at Coastal, again, I prefaced earlier, they just have a knack for finding ways to win. You know, they grind out wins just like they did yesterday in a tight contesting, you know, battle until the 8th. And then they get those 2 key hits there to go up 3 runs. And they have the pitching depth. When I look at Oregon State, their offense has kind of had some lulls at times. This ballpark plays big. And I don't think both teams have the ability to just kind of power their way through it, maybe as some powerhouse SEC teams have in the past. And so then you kind of lean to who plays the best small ball. And when I look at that, I think Coastal is one of the best teams in the country at small ball. You know, they know how to bunt, you know, where they need to be. They have exceptional defense. They, you know, on the offensive side, they get those singles. They know how to drive the ball in the gaps. And when I look at that, they have the same pitching depth as Oregon State. So then when I see the offense, I think it just leans Coastal on that side. I really do.
First game actually starting here in about 15 minutes, Murray State and UCLA, -250 for UCLA on the money line, +190 Murray State. Of course, they were the long shots heading into the tournament, shifted now as we have a couple of losses already, a total there of 11. I don't know if there's a strong opinion from you here on this game, any sort of leans or anything to just watch for here as we see first pitch in about 15 minutes.
I didn't play anything official on this game. A couple leans. I would lean to the under. You know, the day games typically trend to an under, especially in the first game, because, right, there's a lot of nerves, especially for Murray State. You come from an 800, you know, ballpark capacity there at your home field, and now you're playing in front of 24,000 fans. That's, you know, no disrespect to any team, but that's a big jump, right? Like, you have to adjust, and maybe it takes three or four innings to do that, which then takes away some runs. I lean the under there. Murray State plus 190. Like, if you're going to play a side, I feel like you have to play that side. I mean, it's just UCLA trying to lay minus 250. And again, yesterday with Coastal minus 230, I just think both lines were just overinflated. They probably shouldn't have been that high. And, you know, if you're betting on the analytical side, then Murray State's probably the, you know, on the right number of the plus 190. It's just too much to lay with UCLA today.
Now, the late game is obviously the marquee game, LSU taking on Arkansas. Right now, Arkansas minus 125 favorite. Total sitting at 9, but some juice toward the under. I know you like Arkansas long-term in this tournament. Do you think they get the job done tonight? And is minus 130 a fair price to be betting them?
I do, right? I think it's a fair price. I think, again, I talked about it on our show earlier today. College baseball is one of those sports where sometimes it's not just the numbers and the analytics, but there's a lot of pride. There's a lot of revenge factor in there because these kids care. And I think, especially here, right, like, you're going to, if you're on the Arkansas side, you know Zach Rude. He had a ton of fire against Tennessee in the Super Regionals. He has that emotion. He has that passion, not only for the game, but for his teammates and just, you know, winning in general. And I think he, you know, he remembers that in Baton Rouge, Arkansas lost two of three there. Two of them were close games. And I think they want to, you know, get that revenge. And hey, listen, we'll give you the Alex Box, the Baton Rouge series win, but we want to beat you here when it matters in Omaha, because ultimately this is the only win that matters at this point in the game right now. So I think Arkansas is on the right side. This offense between the Aloy brothers, Cam Koziel, you know, you look at Davlon on the front end there. It's just, they're so complete, you know, for what an Arkansas team can be. And I think this may be their year to finally get it for Coach Dave Van Horn. And it starts tonight. And I think they get it done.
So let's look on the, let's say it goes the other direction. You're talking to Quentin Mills from College Baseball Insider. So let's say this goes against them tonight. They end up in the loser's bracket. Does Mike's theory then play out here? Would this be then an opportunity to get in on Arkansas? Or do you think that once you get kind of under the gun there, maybe not as much?
No, I think Mike hit it right on the, you know, the nail on the head. Arkansas, you know, maybe if you don't have a good ticket, I know there's some 15-1s floating out there. I have an 11-1 on a preseason. That would be a time to then jump on the Arkansas bandwagon if you feel like they have the depth and the offense to kind of battle back. And I do personally. Again, I think their pitching depth is there. I think they probably have the best pitching depth, maybe outside of Coastal. And again, they have that, you know, that it factor this year. They have a complete offense to where, as long as you don't get blown out today, then I think you kind of say, hey, look, we've had some jitteries. We know we're a good team. We know we can battle through this, and we have some belief. So, yeah, if you believe in Arkansas to win this, absolutely. If they lose tonight in a game that you felt was a close one, jump on them, because I think it's the right side.
One of my favorite parts about the College World Series is just some of the players that eventually will make it to the majors that we got to keep an eye on here. Who are the marquee players that are going to be relevant here? Obviously not as Skeens in this year's College World Series, but who are the marquee players that are going to be relevant, let's say, as early as next year in Major League Baseball?
Well, I think Zach Root's going to be up there. Cade Anderson, I mean, just two elite pitchers, not only in this tournament, but in college baseball. And then you want to look at the Aloy brothers. I mean, they have, you know, generational talent there. And well, he was just one of the best shortstops in the game. And then you go over and get another shortstop by the name of Avar Arquette for Oregon State. You could talk about, you know, Dax Whitney. Guy was a flamethrower last night. A true freshman. He turned down first-round draft money. Teams are going to be jumping all over him when he finally comes out and he's signable for the draft. And then, you know, I'll give you an underrated name. I think he's one of the best catchers, you know, maybe since Adley Rushman came out, is Caden Bodine. Caden Bodine is one of the most complete players, not only offensively, but defensively for Coastal. He's not the biggest guy in the world. He could probably add a couple pounds once he gets to the pros, but I mean, just defensively and offensively, he's everything you want in a catcher, in a leader, in an offensive production standpoint, a defensive production standpoint. Those guys just jump off the table for me here.
He is Quentin Mills. Find his great work over at College Baseball Insiders. Of course, helps us out at VSiN as well. Quentin, appreciate the time and enjoy the games, man.
Thanks. You guys too.
Oh, Mikey. Back in the day, I went on a recruiting trip with Dave Van Horn. Dave Van Horn used to be at Northwestern State in Louisiana. And
I was going to say, probably wasn't where he is now.
Yeah, went down there and got wined and dined over in Natchitoches, Louisiana. Hour number two when we come back.